The What I Watch Tonight Show.
Good morning, afternoon or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the What I Watch Tonight Show. My name is Matt Hudson, and I am the mad titan behind the site whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. In these episodes, I chat with a guest who specialises in or just loves movies. It's simple as that, really. Whether they're a blogger, a reviewer, a director, a screenwriter, actor, we have a chat, we throw some questions at them, and we just talk some movies. Otherwise, this movie show would be pretty sparse. For tonight's episode, I am pleased to say that joining me from Clark Films is the man himself, Thomas Clark. How on earth are you?
I'm doing okay. Decent.
Not too bad, not too shabby.
Scale of 1 to 10, like 7.2.
I like that because it gives a bit more, it gives some scope to go up, it gives scope to go down, but it's also, you could reach the promised land of 10 out of 10 maybe by the end of the night.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, I hope so, anyway. I hope so, because if it goes down as a result of this, then I haven't done a good job.
I'm sure it won't.
I hope not. So whereabouts in the world are you calling from?
I am in the middle of central New York, like right on the eastern side of the United States.
Oh, fantastic. The Big Apple is joining the small orange. If you know anything about where I live, you'll get that joke.
Yeah, well, not necessarily the Big Apple. I'm like several hours north of it.
You're just off the core.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, the spot just outside that very few people care about. I'm like a couple hours north of that.
But it still sounds called New York.
Yeah.
From where I'm from, anyway. If I say I'm from Brentwood, nobody knows where I am. If you say New York, everybody immediately thinks the city, the lights, the glam. Probably doesn't realise that New York is a city, which is more than just Times Square and the like. So,
and a state.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's like Washington, D.C. and Washington, the state, which aren't even in the same location.
No, yeah.
They're an entire country apart. I don't know how the naming structure works on that one.
I think the Founding Fathers have got a lot to answer for there.
Yeah.
But it's not for me to say, because I do not want to start another war. Well, I've never said that before on this show, and I hope we never have to again.
Honestly, with the current state of this country, you'd be justified in starting another war.
Well, apparently the head in chief has managed to unite Korea by not doing anything to help Korea, so maybe I could.
Let's get off of this immediately.
Yeah.
I've gone on this enough.
Yes, and I know my politics, but I don't want to drag it down by talking about that guy. So when you're not bathing in film, what else do you do? What else do you get up to during your days?
It's a lot of me just sitting in my room regretting all of my life choices.
I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah. In all seriousness, honest. Usually a lot of what I do throughout the day, if I'm not watching movies or TV shows, it's basically just listening to podcasts, watching YouTube channels. Pretty much anyone who knows me knows that I'm a huge Rooster Teeth fanboy. I'm watching their content all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just consume all the things.
For my sins, I haven't seen any of Rooster Teeth. I have been turned on to the idea by one of my podcasting buddies, so I am going to endeavour to actually sit down and watch it, and now I've got another person saying how excellent it is. I feel like I need to get on that bandwagon.
They've got some amazing stuff, especially these days. Like, they're getting into the whole movie sphere. They got a horror comedy coming out, Bloodfest. Their animation department's going full swing. They're doing like a million new shows a day, it seems like. It's awesome.
So there's plenty to sink your teeth into for a newbie like me.
Yeah.
Awesome. I am no different to you. I spend my evenings either listening to podcasts or searching films or just going on a YouTube hunt to see where it takes me, which is usually a lot different to where I started off from. So I am on your side with that. I think it's the best way to be. I'm boring now. I don't go out anymore unless I go to the cinema. So I'd much rather sit in with a cup of tea, which is very English, and just listen to other people tell me what they think about films.
And also, this is going to sound so weird, but
go on.
Because I'm a fan of Rooster Teeth, I am by extension a fan of Achievement Hunter, their gaming division that does a whole crap load of Let's Play videos, and it's really hilarious. And by extension of that, I'm a fan of one of their core cast members, Gavin Free, who is British. But his entire persona is that he's an idiot and everyone makes fun of him. So I hear your British voice, and because of what Gavin Free has conditioned me to do, I feel an overwhelming need to make fun of you for it, even though you don't deserve it at all.
I will allow you a couple of attempts to make fun. I'll allow
that. No, I won't do it.
I need to check. Certainly need to check this out then. There have been a few times when I have been made fun of for various reasons. So I will take no offence, especially if it's entertaining. So I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah.
So you are the honcho. You are the other mad titan behind Clark Films. So tell us more about what you do and the format you deliver your work on.
Well, I do pretty much nothing all that different from every other critic you've ever seen in terms of format. I go see new movies. I sit in my room and watch new TV shows. I review pretty much every single one as it comes out. Every Monday, I'll also do news episodes that are like an hour long. It's insane. And I'm just talking about everything, giving all my thoughts, failing to speak, all the fun stuff.
I like your review shows because it isn't solely focused on one thing. It is anything that's come out in that week of film, whether it's a horror story, a comic book story, a drama story, a casting story, or even obviously some sad news of passings. It seems to encompass everything, so it's quite a good little magazine of episodes.
Yeah. Like, I really do try as much as I possibly can to see as many things as possible and talk about as many things as possible. And every once in a while, something will happen that I just don't care about. And I'll do like a little post-outro on the audio podcast of just, here's 2 minutes of me talking about whatever and no one cares. But for the most part, like, I try to be as versatile as possible in what I review and what I talk about on the news segments.
Yeah, and I've noticed a few posts which can probably just be described as a rant against some of the things you didn't like.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, not everything gets away with it.
Yeah, there are certain films that are just so awful that I'm just in pure rage and cannot sit down and actually review in any real coherent way, so like I just get angry and ramble for 10 minutes.
I find it fun to hear people just talk, just let it all, let the hate flow through you, let it all out. What was, I know the answer to this, but for those out there who don't, what was the last film you you ranted about? I think it was fairly recent.
Yeah, the last film I ranted about was I Feel Pretty.
And I haven't seen this film, and just for the benefit of those out there, there may be some spoilers out there, but I will give a massive warning if it's to do with a new film. But I Feel Pretty, spoiler away.
Honestly, I'm not sure if there's that much to spoil, because really, every single plot point you can possibly expect is laid out just within the premise. If you haven't heard of this movie, it's literally just Amy Schumer is not happy with her body. She then gets hit in the head and is immediately confident in herself, but no change has happened at all. So she just walks around thinking she's the most beautiful person in the world, and everyone's like, oh, you're ugly, meh. And that's the movie.
It sounds like if you have no self-confidence, just take a good beating and that will sort everything out.
Yeah, just go to SoulCycle, fall off, get your hair caught in the wheel of someone else's cycle. That's literally how it happens. And then you're good.
From what I know about the film, the message is in the right place. It's just horribly executed. Potentially the message that you should feel confident within yourself. Great, I like that. But it's how it's presented, I guess.
On paper, yes, but this film's definition of promoting body positivity is a series of fat jokes aimed at someone who isn't even all that fat, in all honesty. Amy Schumer's, like, average size.
Mm-hmm.
And in trying to take the moral high ground, this film kind of tacitly admits to Hollywood's shallow image problem, which is way more funny than anything in the movie, by the way. And then it feels like they kind of figured this out halfway through and then tried to make up for it with the most absurdly preachy ending of all time.
Oh, goody. I could just imagine them getting halfway through and thinking, ah, shit, we've still got half a film to do. What do we do?
Yeah.
And then obviously you've got Amy Schumer in the lead, and whatever you think of her, I'm not a massive fan of the work she puts out, so that would sounds like my own type of private hell.
The only thing I will 100% be firm on, she is not a good actress. Like, whatever you think about her as, like, a stand-up comedian, that's fine, whatever. She should not be starring in films.
Let alone leading.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the film doesn't come out for another week in the United Kingdom, so I think it's Star Wars Day, May the 4th it comes out, and I will be spending May the 4th doing much more fun things than watching I Feel Pretty.
Yep.
Just a disclaimer, if anyone out there likes a film, then great, that's the beauty of films.
Oh yeah, but absolutely.
But I noticed the rant. I had to listen to it, of course, and just thought I would give you your time to go into that. And talk. Just also, this gives a chance for the guys out there to kind of get a flavour of what Thomas talks about on his pods.
Yep.
So, why podcasting? Because a lot of reviews of can either be vlogs, the YouTube video blogs, written reviews are still going. So why podcasting?
Honestly, I've just always been a bigger fan of that medium than anything else. I've been listening to podcasts for years and years and years. There's not really a whole lot of the style I do in that format. So I was just like, why not?
Why not? How long have you been doing it for?
Like, I want to say 2.5 years.
Okay.
At this point, in the grand scheme of things, not a hugely long time, but still, it's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, when you're putting out weekly episodes, I mean, 2.5 years suddenly turns into, what, 100-something, 120, 30 episodes?
Yeah.
So, do you remember much about your first episode, or what's changed since that one?
Oh, God, we don't need to talk about that. It was a review of We Are Your Friends, which is a movie nobody cares about. I think it broke records of, like, the least highest grossing movie ever. And I actually do own the DVD because that is kind of a special film to me because of that. But it was something that no one cared about. I clearly had not refined my style of review or even my style of talking on mic, period. And it's just, I can't even imagine going back to it now. It is probably the most cringeworthy thing on the planet. And if this episode convinces anyone to go and listen to my stuff, for the love of God, don't go that far back.
I've listened to that first episode.
Oh, God.
I went back, but I would never say it. What I do say is you can see the progression from that first episode to your last one. There is a clear upward trajectory, and that isn't meant as a negative because, you know, I've done it my first episode and this was pondering and plodding.
Yeah.
Whereas now it gets a bit, it's hopefully a bit better. But yeah, you can see where you've taken it, you've become more confident, and the style was, you know, it's only got better since, which should only be taken as a positive, surely.
Yeah, and I mean, I make fun of myself for my early stuff all the time, so I give everyone else permission to do it too. I say don't go that far back as just a save yourself. I don't want to subject anyone to that.
It's not as bad as he's saying.
It is for me.
It's easy to say that from the outside, of course, but no, you can certainly see where, obviously, you've grown into it and become a lot more confident on the mic, and more power to you.
Yeah. Two things everyone should know about me right up front. I can't speak and I hate myself.
This guy also leads his own podcast, by the way. So.
Yeah, I reference that all the time.
That's an interesting double act.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of speaking, it certainly doesn't come across that way on your pods. Obviously, once you turn the microphone off, that may be a different story, of course.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a running joke with me. Like, I reference my flubs all the time as they happen, and I'll make a big joke out of it. I make it sound like I'm the worst spoken person ever, and that's not true, I know that, but man, there are moments where if you isolated it, I would sound like a babbling moron.
I think you do a good job with what you do. How much success have you found through the format? Do you think you've come along a lot more, and do you think your listeners or whatever have come along since that first episode? I'm sure you've probably got more now than you did then.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a gradual increase. Like, I haven't seen any like explosive growth or anything, but it's certainly there. Every once in a while, I will hit a milestone of, oh, I'm getting this number of downloads like every single episode, or oh, on my video versions, I have this many subscribers to the channel. Like, I'll hit those milestones every once in a while, and that'll be gratifying, but it's happening, it's just on a very microscopic level at the moment.
It's happening, though?
It is happening, though.
It must be gratifying, just like you say, because, you know, you're just a one-man band doing what you love, and it's nice to know that there are people, wherever they are in the world, who take the time to listen, so it must be quite nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. Like, I hate using cliche phrases, but I will use a cliche phrase in this case. A cliche phrase in this case. That's an example of me just tripping over myself. I will say, like, even one person giving enough of a crap to actually go in and listen to me talk about some random movie is really, really cool.
I agree. It's a nice cliche to have, though, because it literally is true, because I don't know your listeners, of course, but it's fair to say that probably not all of them know who you are as a person. They just know your online, your podcasting personality. So, you know, you've got people who you don't even know are listening to what you say. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of your reviews or your podcasts, what do you bring to yours that makes them particularly interesting or listenable? What is it about the Clark Films podcast?
Well, what I try to bring to it is something I think should be just a base level to reach for any film critic, written or YouTube or podcast or whatever. I try to bring a healthy balance of thoughtfulness and relatability. I go out of my way to try to hit a deeper level in actually explaining why the hell I think what I think, what exactly makes a movie great or terrible, and actually going as far as bringing up flaws with films I love or redeeming qualities with films I hate, instead of just saying, this is the greatest thing ever, or this is the worst thing ever.
Just because.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. There are people out there who do that, surprisingly.
Yeah. And on the relatability side, like, I try at every possible opportunity to bring some form of personality, some form of enthusiasm, and I would like to think that passion does seep through, and my own enthusiastic voice can bring people in. And with a healthy balance of that, that's exactly what it sounds like. It's just, I try to find a nice scale of that, try to find a nice balance of that, because I've seen reviews, and I'm not going to call out anyone in particular, but I've seen reviews that have all of one and none of the other, and it's just the worst.
That's not really a review, of course, is it? Because if you're only willing to see one side and not look at the other side, then almost, what's the point?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. but you'd be surprised. I've watched critics, successful critics, who have done an amazing job of catering to their audiences, somehow have all personality and no thoughtfulness, or all thoughtfulness and no personality. And it's just weird.
I would agree with that. I was going to say, what are there any particular critics that you take stock in or that you follow?
Well, there's some I'm on and off with, but the one I watch the reviews of religiously is Chris Stuckman.
You get Stuckmanized.
That is the person who got me like into film criticism. That is the person who was like, oh, this is a thing I could do and have fun with.
It is amazing how many people cite Stuckman because he's a bloke who sits in a chair in the corner of a room and talks movies. I mean, there's nothing more to it. Yes, he's a guy who knows his stuff. He's passionate without being over the top and throwing himself around the screen.
Yeah.
Though some of those can be quite good. What I like, I always find him honest as well. I trust what he says because I believe where he's coming from. Even with films, we all know he's going to give a positive review to. He will find there will be things in there which he doesn't like, and it never comes across as nitpicking.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, at this stage, as I've developed my own palette over the years, I find myself only agreeing with Stuckman like 50% of the time.
But that's healthy
even in the
as
cases,
well.
Even in the cases when I do disagree with him, like, I totally understand where he's coming from because he lays it out that eloquently.
Yeah. And I'm a firm believer, like, exactly what you've just said. If you don't like a film, especially one that I do like, that's great. But if you're going to review it, just, you know, give a rational reason to answer what, ask them why. If you didn't like, I don't know, The Last Jedi, which gets mentioned a lot, that's fine.
God.
Why not, though? That's all I ask, because I did like it, but I'll tell you why I like it. But I'm not going to then say, you're an idiot for not liking it. I'll also sit there and say I found a lot of things which I didn't like about it. But there's so many people who you can't necessarily trust to give in their honest opinion. But Stuckman, even if I don't agree with him, I always believe in him.
Yeah. Last Jedi, that's a weird one, because that is the film that pushed me to actively just, I don't want to say hate, but actively be annoyed with Star Wars fans. Because it seems every time a Star Wars movie comes out, there's a segment of fandom that just is outraged for no good reason.
Yeah, well, I have just said that everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But when you have
obviously
a Twitter handle like Resist Disney or something, that's when I start to wonder about sanity and humanity.
Yeah. And also, the argument of, oh, they crapped all over canon, or they crapped all over the essence of Star Wars. Like, do you know what Star Wars is?
The essence of Star Wars was really only 6 films. The EU was never actually the essence of Star Wars officially. It was other people's takes on it, which is exactly what Rian Johnson, J.J. Abrams and Gareth Edwards have done.
Yeah.
And the plethora of authors.
Yeah, and also, like, Star Wars in general, that was a franchise that started out as a film that took a ton of risks that beautifully paid off. And then The Last Jedi comes around. It's exactly that. Rian Johnson took a ton of risks that I think paid off beautifully and resulted in that film being a masterpiece. And now people just kind of forgot that that's how Star Wars started.
That's how Empire wasn't received well, and look at it now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing I have heard cited a million times, and it's absolutely correct.
Exactly. I mean, I love Star Wars. I've made no secret of that, but I'm also not blind to the flaws of it. So I don't cite this as a excuse to say everybody who doesn't like it is an idiot or a moron. That's not what I'm saying whatsoever. But that is just probably the most divisive film. Poh. Certainly the last, other than Henry Cavill's moustache, of the last year or so. So I mentioned that, but it's interesting to hear you say that it's a masterpiece. Just going off topic, why is it a masterpiece to you?
Well, I just adored everything that Rian Johnson did with it. Rian Johnson is a director whose work I've followed for a long, long time with Brick and Looper, who I feel is fairly underrated. And to see him direct a Star Wars film and bring his style to it and have it be so genuinely unpredictable and tense on a level that I have not seen Star Wars be maybe since the original trilogy.
Yeah.
It was just such an amazing experience and brilliantly crafted. And like, I mean, I don't want to say it's perfect because no movie is perfect, but
of course, yeah,
it's as close to perfection as I think I could have ever hoped it to be.
What did you think of Canto Bite?
Canto Bite, I thought, was fine. I think people nitpick that sequence a bit too much, kind of overlooking the thematical elements of that scene, because that's like a sequence going on a side quest that completely fails. And that kind of plays into this larger idea of your heroes aren't going to always win. Sometimes, like, they're people. Sometimes they will fail.
Yep, it's played out for the whole film.
Yeah, so to go on that entire side quest, and I've heard people say, oh, it's completely unnecessary. There's no reason for it. That's the point.
Well, yeah, it's not unnecessary. For me it was the weaker part of the film, only because I was so invested in what was going on elsewhere. But it gives Finn and Rose, of course, certainly Finn, it opens his eyes even more to what really goes on, because obviously he was a stormtrooper, he didn't know what goes on. Obviously the war machine, you've got these extravagant people throwing money about. How do they get rich? War. Oh, they're selling it to the bad guys. Not all the time, though. They're selling it to the good guys, too.
Yep.
It opens his eyes. Yeah, there's the themes of failure throughout. Poe Dameron failed through the whole film, pretty much. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. His entire arc is learning how not to be the biggest idiot in the universe.
Yeah. Whereas the original trilogy, that's kind of how Han Solo got to where he did, by getting lucky.
Yeah.
And this kind of turns it on its head somewhat. But I just wanted to know. I too very much like the film, but I just wanted to know. I've heard people who say they like it. I've heard people say they didn't. I just wanted to get the reason why somebody would call it a masterpiece. Good on you. I can't argue any of that. So, going on to movies in general. What movie would you say has left the biggest impression on you, for whatever reason? What's stuck with you through everything?
That is a very easy question for me. Whiplash, 100%.
Brilliant film.
Yeah. And that was one of those films. It's my favorite movie of all time. Not just because it's brilliantly crafted and tense and has like one of the greatest performances in film history with J.K. Simmons. And is just excellent in every possible way. It just came out at the right time for me. And I think I've talked about this before in some place, but when that movie came out, I was in like midway through my senior year of high school, and I was a timpanist in concert ensemble, the second highest level band in the school.
Okay.
And I took my work very seriously. I was pretty good, if I do say so myself. And I took my work seriously. I had a massive drive to be the best I could possibly be. I had a teacher who was kind of a hard ass, not nearly as openly dickish as J.K. Simmons in Whiplash. Like, he was one of those guys who would love you if you were putting in everything and loved you if you were just there to be the best they could possibly be and serve the ensemble, and if you were just lazing around and being an idiot, he hated you. And I just saw in that film so many parallels to my experience as a timpanist in that ensemble, and there was so much authenticity to it, and it just spoke to me in so many ways. And again, it's also just an amazing film. I'd love it even if it wasn't for all of that. But that context in my life is what kind of pushed it to be my favorite movie of all time.
It is a phenomenal film. Yeah. Did J.K. Simmons win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for that?
Yes, and that was very much deserved. Should have.
I was going to say, because I seem to remember him doing it, but had he not, that would have been one of the biggest snubs of the last 20, 30 years. I love Whiplash. I like Damien Chazelle as a visual storyteller as well. I think he nails it spot on. But Whiplash is a brutal drama about music. Yeah. I think it's fantastic. I'm so glad somebody brought that up because it hasn't been brought up once on any of the shows I've done.
Really,
so I'm
so surprised. Pleased.
I honestly hasn't done. Obviously, a lot of people now think Chazelle. They think La La Land. So be it. It's like La La Land. I think is a near enough masterpiece. But then you throw something like Whiplash in, you think, well, actually, hold on. Which one is the better film of his?
Well, I would say Whiplash, but I love La La Land as well. That was one of my favorite movies of that year. And he's actually working on a Neil Armstrong biopic.
First Man, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
With Ryan Gosling again,
which is something I'm really looking forward to. Like, I'm really interested to see what he'll do with it.
Well, yeah, because you've got Whiplash, which is, again, another drama like I just mentioned about music. Then you've got La La Land, which is obviously just music-centric. And he's kind of, it seems like he's taken a left for a curveball by going into a biopic about the first man in space. It's sort of, how did you get from the A to B? But it's got his name attached to it, and it's got Ryan Gosling in it, yeah. So I'm on board already.
Honestly, if you think about what Whiplash is, and you think about what First Man could be, it's not too much of a stretch, because Whiplash is a film at its core about someone trying to be like the best in his craft, the best jazz drummer. And if they take a route of Neil Armstrong having this huge space ambition and just focusing a lot on that, then it would be right in Chazelle's wheelhouse.
I think they probably will go down that path. Because you play to your strengths, but also it was essentially about Neil Armstrong, so they have to make it compelling and have to make us, you know, invest even more into this guy. So they could have really asked for a better character director, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad you mentioned it. I mentioned it again. I'm so glad somebody mentioned Whiplash. I like Miles Teller as an actor. I think he's a superb actor.
Yeah.
And I think J.K. Simmons is still underrated, despite being an Academy Award-winning actor.
Yeah. I'm not sure if have you heard of the show Counterpart on Starz?
I've heard of, never seen.
Oh, it's amazing. It's J.K. Simmons playing against himself in a Cold War-esque alternate universe drama, and it's incredible.
It sounds awesome. It's just having J.K. Simmons playing against himself in an alternate universe. That just sounds incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I don't think we get the Starz channel over here. So unless it's on some other streaming channel, but yeah. I haven't seen it. But it's one I have heard a lot about. I would like to check this out. But anything, I love J.K. Simmons as an actor. So again, him playing against himself is a massive win. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway, because I want to. What was the last film you saw?
See, I know what you want me to say, and I know what I want to say, which is Infinity War, but that is factually incorrect. The most recent film I saw, and it has made me hate life, is The Week Of, which is a new Netflix Adam Sandler film. Because they keep giving him a vehicle for some reason. And he's playing a father who's struggling to pay for his daughter's wedding while refusing help from the groom's much wealthier father, who is played by Chris Rock. And both of them look like they want to be literally anywhere else.
Well, I'm sure Adam Sandler's wallet doesn't complain too much.
Yeah, it's just, and I said this in the review, I actually kind of feel bad for them because they just look like they're trying to mask their pain every second they're on screen. Like, they clearly do not want to be here, but they just keep forcing themselves to do these types of movies.
I'm probably going to give that one a massive miss, if I'm going to be honest. I'm not
a
fan.
Do yourself a favor and yeah, do that. Ugh.
The Meyerowitz Stories, I love that film, Adam Sandler's last film, one of his last films. But other than that, his Netflix output has been poo-poo. So yeah. I'm going to give that one a massive miss. Oh, what would you say was the best film, the last film you saw that you really enjoyed?
Infinity War, obviously.
Oh, really? Where did that come from? If you haven't heard Thomas's review of this, if you haven't seen the film, go watch the film first. But if you haven't heard the review, sorry, go check it out and listen for the unbridled, unrestrained passion and love this man has for the MCU as a whole, but also this titan of a movie. I'm going to open the floor for your discussion on the movie, but if you can, obviously keep it as spoiler light as you possibly can.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Which at times can be quite hard.
Yeah. Thanos demands your silence.
Yeah.
God. Where do I even start? I've been very vocal in that was my most anticipated movie of all time, and it just did not disappoint me in any way. It was so brilliant and pulled an extraordinary balancing act of characters that I just would never have thought possible in just several years ago. It's absolutely incredible and unpredictable, and I don't even know what to say. It's much easier when I'm doing a review and I have a page of notes in front of me, but it was just pure satisfaction and pure emotional energy. It has like the most terrifying villain of any Marvel movie ever. It's just incredible.
I think I described it recently as pretty much, it's big, it's emotional, it's exciting, it's grim, it's fun, it's tragic, and it's epic.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how I could traverse any kind of spoilers whilst also trying to get the scope of the film. Because I've been very vocal beforehand in kind of doubting how the hell are they going to put 16 million characters into one film and make it compelling and engaging and fun and also a good movie. But somehow they did it.
Yeah.
The Russo brothers did it.
Yeah, and like, I've also been very vocal in this. I've had blind faith in the Russo brothers since Civil War happened to make great Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Because, like, just a few years ago, we were talking, how are they going to get, like, 12 heroes in one movie titled Captain America? And they somehow pulled that off. And it's still, I think, the best Marvel movie. And from that moment on, I was just like, yeah, Infinity War is going to be at the very least good.
They did do very, very, very well. Yeah. With getting everyone together, because again, I've also said on other podcasts, I am a fair weather comic book movie fan. I'm an average fan. I check in when the films come out, and then I usually just wait till the next one without getting overly invested. However, I thought I went to opening night of Infinity War, and my God, I was blown. I expected to be, but I was blown away by the scale of this film. And as I mentioned in my review, I live in England. English people don't know how to emote. But there was everybody was cheering, clapping, gasping, screaming at the screen. And it made it an experience, which was superb.
Yeah. I am so happy that Marvel moved up the release date in America to match
the
rest of the world. Bloody otherwise, hell. This conversation would have been very awkward.
Oh, you would have literally had to have spent a week under a rock, because we all know there's idiots out there who will try to spoil it. But even then, sometimes it's quite hard to talk about the film without spoiling it. We've done quite well so far, but it's very hard to even talk about it without alluding to anything.
Yeah, and I think I honestly think that's why Marvel just decided to do it. They were like, you know what? It'd probably be better for everyone if it just came out everywhere on the same day.
It didn't make much sense to have it so far apart. I know it comes out in China in what 2 weeks' time, but that's still an emerging market. But for the major markets, why on earth the United States was a week later? Made no sense.
Yeah, like, that's just been happening every single year since, like, the Avengers 1, and it was just always frustrating.
Yeah, and it still makes no sense why they would do that, because for I'm a firm believer that marquee films should just basically be brought out on the same day, or the same week at least, around the world, because in today's day and age, within a minute of the film finishing, somebody's online talking about it. Whether they mean to spoil it or not, you can't get away from the fact that people are a lot more touchy nowadays because there is a lot of, because, you know, they don't, it's not the same as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago when you could walk in to watch The Phantom Menace and you might not know, apart from the track list they released, you might not know everything that happened, or even 10 years ago, it was a different environment. But now, of course, it's such a massive, the world has shrunk to the point where everyone can tell everybody anything, that I don't see why every film wouldn't be released, certainly one as big as this, wouldn't be released at the same time.
Yeah. Social media is like the best and worst thing to ever happen to the cinematic landscape.
100%. I know how much you love these films. So can you imagine, had it been brought out a week later in the States, and let's just say you were checking your emails and you logged off, and a news story popped up on the feed, pretty much giving away what happened. How much would that have just ruined 10 years worth of anticipation?
It would have been bad. I'm not even going to try and think about it.
Exactly. I mean, then they had the Forbes and Variety release a spoiler-heavy articles, which didn't help. But because I believe you've been with it since day one in the MCU.
Yeah, at least I've been with it since day one, in the sense that I was 10 years old and I watched the movies as soon as my mother would let me watch them. Yeah. And it's also weird. I mentioned this in the review as well, but this universe has been around for literally half my life, which is insane to think about.
Yeah, yeah. So this would be your Star Wars, I guess, for the generations gone.
I mean, if I didn't also love Star Wars to a massively unhealthy degree, I would agree with you. But I adore both.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for a whole bunch of other people, that comparison is perfect. But I have enough of an old soul that I went back. I think I started watching the Star Wars movies before even the Marvel movies. So, in some ways, Star Wars predates Marvel in my life in many ways. So I just adore both. It's possible to love both Star Wars and Marvel.
Is it possible to love both Marvel and DC?
Honestly, I've been more forgiving of DC than most. Like, I enjoyed Suicide Squad somewhat. I liked Justice League. Of course, I really liked Wonder Woman as much as everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, you look at the best that DC has and the best that Marvel has, it's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, DC has that legendary stable of probably the most iconic superheroes. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. This is a triumvirate.
And somehow they haven't made it work.
I know. It's almost patronizing to say, but I'm so willing for them to make a bloody good film. I really want them to, because Wonder Woman was... I enjoyed Suicide Squad a bit more than some. And I really enjoyed Wonder Woman. But I really want them to come out. I don't think Aquaman's going to do it. But I really want them to come out and make one film which is just awesome.
I have mixed feelings on Aquaman. Because on the one hand, Aquaman's the dumbest character in all of comic book history. But on the other hand, this is being directed by freaking James Wan.
Yeah.
Yeah, who directed the Conjuring movies and Furious 7 and freaking Insidious. And it's just like, this dude is a brilliant filmmaker, yet he's been given the dumbest character. So I don't know if that's going to result in a good movie or just a thing I do not care about at all.
Well, Iron Man was a side character when the MCU started, so maybe it'll have an effect like that. There won't be anywhere as big as that, but maybe Aquaman could step out of the shadows and become, you know, one of the leading lights now. I don't think
knows?
He will, but he might do.
I mean,
but I like Jason Momoa.
Honestly, probably the better example would be Guardians of the Galaxy. I remember.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
People just knew. They knew Guardians of the Galaxy was going to suck and be a flop because all those characters were dumb. And then the movie came out and it was amazing and continues to be one of the best Marvel movies and made all the money in the world. And they're arguably the most popular characters in the MCU now, which is an extreme turnaround.
It was a big risk bringing them out as part of the universe. But boy, did it work.
Yeah, and I think Marvel made a very intentional decision to do Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man first after their Phase 1 characters.
Yes, yeah.
Like, they just dug down and were like, okay, what are the two dumbest properties on paper we can get away with? Let's make those good, and then people will go to see literally anything we do.
And Doctor they somehow Strange. Managed to do it. I liked Doctor Strange. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Doctor Strange, great movie. No one questioned whether it was going to be decent for a second because we already did the two dumbest things. Black Panther, everyone was okay with. Captain Marvel, everyone's okay with. Like, it was a very, very smart move.
And another strong move was you now kind of have to go and see Avengers 4. So,
yeah.
Throughout having seen Infinity War and how they've set it all up and what goes on and what doesn't go on, they've kind of made Avengers 4 required viewing now.
Yeah. And honestly,
very clever.
And I'm going to say this in the least spoilery way possible. With the way they left it off, for the first time in the entire history of the MCU, I honestly have zero idea where they're going to go.
Yeah.
Like, they just completely turned all my expectations
or how they're
on their
do
head.
It, yeah.
And just, how are they going to move from here?
They've given one idea, which I won't go into. Of course, they gave that as part of the film. But, yeah, how are they going to do it?
Yeah.
How on earth are they going to move on and carry on the success, but also make it as compelling as this last film was?
Yeah.
That is my big question for you guys at Marvel. If you're listening, how are you going to do it?
Yeah. I'm just hoping that Marvel, or the Avengers movies rather, aren't a reverse Star Trek where the even number ones aren't as good.
I'll tell you something, Avengers 4 is going to have a lot of hype. I think it's going to have a lot of expectation. And I hope they keep it as secretive as they have with this one. So you go into the movie not knowing anything.
Yeah. Honestly, after Infinity War, like, I think my two most anticipated films of next year, it's a two-way tie between Avengers 4 and Glass.
Of course, Glass, yes. Yeah. I'm interested to see Bruce Willis actually try and act again.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of that lately.
Yeah,
I saw Death Wish. I know the depths he's sunk to.
He's plummeted to.
Yeah.
I was expecting to say episode 9. I'm glad again. Glass. Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, like I say Glass because I guess we've hit on what excites me. I'm a big fan of crossover stuff. They did such an amazing job of setting Split up as a surprise Unbreakable sequel. I love that movie. I adore Unbreakable. So I'm excited to see those two films come together. And I'm also just excited that M. Night Shyamalan makes good movies again.
Yeah, he's got his mojo back for sure.
Yeah.
That end scene was fantastic. The way they kind of ended and then suddenly they're in that diner.
Yeah.
And the news is going. And Bruce Willis turns up and you think, are they going to go there? He did. He did. When does Glass come out? Is that January next year, or is it later, do you know?
That's January, which a couple years ago I would have said is a bad omen, but then Split came out in January.
Exactly,
so.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's only a few sort of dumpster bumps left in the calendar year now, because there's so many movies getting released now that it's almost, I mean, it came out in September and just ripped up the rule book there. Obviously, The Force Awakens a few years ago tore up December, and now that's become a hunting ground for films. So there's only a few. I mean, Deadpool came out, I think, March or February of the year before last.
Yep.
So that, you know, February used to be a graveyard. Now, not so much. So I love the fact that there's not really that many places now where you can hide a really cack movie.
Yeah. I love that you say Star Wars took over December, because one of the biggest delights has been to see 2018, a year where a Star Wars movie comes out in May instead of December, and just see everyone rush to that month. Like Aquaman's coming there.
Mary
Poppins. Spider-Man animated movie's coming out there.
Mortal Engines is coming out.
That one as well. Just a bunch of stuff.
Bohemian Rhapsody is November now. But yeah, that literally, I found that myself looking at the releases. Suddenly it's a packed month.
Yeah. And then Episode 9 moving to December and everything getting the hell out of the way.
Apart from one film. Jumanji 2, or 3, sorry, is putting itself up against Star Wars again, apparently.
Yeah, because they tried it once and
it worked.
Had success.
It's ballsy, but yeah, it worked. And
broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. It all depends on Jumanji 3 being as fun as the second one was, but who's to say it won't? If they keep the core cast, who's to say it won't be?
I really hope it's the same four kids, but this time they play different characters.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so like the girl that was in Jack Black is now in, like, I don't know, Kevin Hart or something, and the one who was in Dwayne Johnson is now in Jack
Karen
Black.
Gillen or something. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
That would be nice to, yes, they get on the game and quickly rush to be Dwayne Johnson's character so you can beat each other first. I'd be interested to see how they do it, if they have a digital, or be like a Xbox or something. I would never thought I'd say I was intrigued in a Jumanji film, but I'm quite intrigued by the third one because I enjoyed the second one an awful lot.
Yeah, I never thought the switch from board game to video game would ever work, but somehow they made that make some form of sense. And that alone is a magnificent achievement.
Yeah, it helped having a good cast, and The Rock is, Dwayne Johnson is genuinely pretty good and everything he's in, and it's very hard to dislike the man.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart was good. I like Karen Gillan. Jack Black was fantastic.
I'm intrigued. Way against type.
I loved it. That could have gone so badly. That joke could have become unfunny very quickly, but he played it so well that it never lost its fun.
Yeah. And also, Karen Gillan has kind of quietly become one of, like, the biggest actresses right now. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, she is in an awful lot this year. Obviously, she's in the MCU. Jumanji, I mean, there's one off the top of my head which she's in, which is fairly big coming up. It'll come to me soon, but...
Well, she got kind of her fame in Doctor Who.
That's right, yep.
Yeah, so that was a nice launching point. Like, everyone knows Karen Gillan now. She's quickly becoming a household name, which is great because she's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think she's a great actress, and I look forward to seeing what she does next. And she set herself up nicely in the MCU and in Infinity War as well with her performance there. So I like asking this question because it can elicit some fun responses, but if they were making a biopic, if Damien Chazelle was making a biopic called Return of the Clock, who's playing you in that film?
Well, I've thought about this question quite a bit, just racking my brain in my spare time, thinking, what would be the best response? And now I have, like, the best, most serious, it's going to be amazing, the greatest thing ever response.
Go on.
Tom Holland in a fat suit. And I'm not just saying it's Tom Holland, but he's wearing a fat suit. I want him to be credited as Tom Holland in a fat suit and just starring have this entire persona built as a marketing ploy. He'll go on Kimmel and just be like, I'm Tom Holland in a fat suit. Also, I talk in a deeper voice for some reason.
Would it be in brackets, Tom Holland in a fat suit, or would it be proudly Tom Holland?
It would be
in a fat
proudly
suit.
Displayed.
Yeah.
Just on all the posters starring Tom Holland in a fat suit.
Can I ask why Tom Holland?
He's the youngest person I could think of who is a good actor.
That's fair enough. And obviously you could put him in any kind of suit and he'd still have that boyish charm to him.
Yeah. In all seriousness, like, I've gotten some heat for this from some people who love Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield, and I love both of them as well, but Tom Holland, best Spider-Man.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I like Tobey Maguire. I don't particularly like Spider-Man 3 or what they did with him, but I think I'd go back to Tobey Maguire because they were the first ones I saw. What is it, 2002, I think it came out?
Yeah, 02 and 04 were the good ones.
That's right, yeah, 04 especially. So yeah. I remember seeing those and growing up with those, so I kind of have an attachment to Tobey Maguire. Andrew Garfield was serviceable, I thought he was okay.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield was very good at most things.
Yeah.
I like Tom Holland. Tom Holland brings that kind of perfect naivety to the character, because Peter Parker is a school kid still.
Perfectly awkward.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire always looked like he was a bit too old to be in school.
Yeah, and also, to defend Andrew Garfield for a second, he was great in the role, he just had the worst material to work with.
Yeah, I mean, The Amazing Spider-Man was okay, but the second one was... Phew!
Garbage. Worst.
Yeah.
It somehow made Spider-Man 3 look good by comparison. Which
and it didn't even have an emo scene in it.
Yeah, I honestly, as painful as that whole emo dance sequence is, I would rather watch that than The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Oh,
wow, because it is painful. That is a big statement.
It's honestly, Spider-Man 3, as bad as it is, has its fair share of moments.
It's redeemable. Yeah, I agree. And Spider-Man 3 has Venom, and of course we have a Venom coming up this year. So what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know why they're making that. Like, the trailer that came out, the one that actually had Venom in it, was okay. There were some really awesome moments in it, but a lot of it feels fairly stale and cliche, which obviously it could just be poor presentation in the trailer. The movie itself could be the greatest thing ever, but it just didn't leave a good... I'll say first impression because I don't like to think of that first teaser as a thing, but I don't know why they're making this, except money.
Well, yeah, money's the big word. I agree. Whereas with Thanos, you could see Josh Brolin, you could see him through that purple motion capture.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that with the character Venom, the symbiote, the symbiote, whatever they want to pronounce it, the symbiote, I wonder how much of Tom Holland is actually going to be
Tom Hardy
is actually going to shine through when Venom is actually Venom, because I worry that it's going to be Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock and then a CGI Venom who doesn't really have any resemblance.
Honestly, the Venom suit itself looks good enough that's not a huge deal for me, but I can definitely see that. If that gets to be too much of a CGI-heavy whatever, that could get very old very quick.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. The actual presentation looks superb. And I hope it's going to be a good film, because, again, it's got Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams is in it, Riz Ahmed, who I really like. It's got I'm sure I'm missing somebody else out, but it's got a superb core cast going for it, and we all know Tom Hardy is notorious for picking specific roles. He'll only pick a film which he believes is going to be any good. Michelle Williams is a stunning actress, and Riz Ahmed is a fantastic upcomer, so the cast gives me some sort of hope.
Also worth mentioning that Ludwig Göransson, who did the score for Black Panther, is composing the score for this movie as well. So if nothing else, it's going to have an incredible score.
Oh, for sure. And apparently they're going to have Woody Harrelson is going to be Carnage, apparently.
Yeah.
How that's going to work,
My favorite thing when talking about Venom casting in the early stages was making fun of the internet, because every time someone got cast in an unspecified role, the internet just assumed they were going to be Carnage. And my favorite thing was making fun of that.
I think Michelle Williams may be the only one who's gotten away with that so far, that I know of.
And even then, I made fun of the people assuming everyone was Carnage and yelling, Michelle Williams is going to be Carnage! We're going to have a female Carnage! It's going to be awesome!
I would love it if they turned a complete screwball and Michelle Williams was Carnage.
Actually, now that I say it, that would be pretty damn good casting.
you want a ballsy move. That would be superb if she just turned into the wrecking machine.
I might actually care about the movie then.
I might do, and you know, who knows? Michelle Williams could get an Academy Award for playing Carnage. She's that good.
I know the Academy.
Wishful thinking. I like Woody Harrelson in most things, and I'm looking forward to seeing him in Solo. But Carnage, Woody Harrelson. It could work. It may not work, but I'm interested in that. I like, but for the answer, Tom Holland in a fat suit. It's certainly original.
Yeah. Like, that would be amazing to see Tom Holland in a fat suit play me in a film.
I would like to start a campaign for this now. What is the best medium to do this?
Start a Kickstarter and raise
money
for Tom Holland. A Thomas Clark biopic starring Tom Holland in a fat suit.
I'm going to badger Tom Holland incessantly until he tells me to piss off about this. Hi, Tom. We've got an idea for you. You may not get paid for it, but come on. You work for the love of your craft, surely.
Yeah. Also, you're not allowed to do interviews. Ever.
Yeah, ever. Yeah. You're just Tom Holland in a fat suit.
Yeah. We don't want you to do interviews. We don't want you to spoil the secrets of my life.
Yeah. We may or may not own you after this film, so you may always forever be known as Tom Holland in a fat suit. It would make the new Spider-Man film interesting.
It really would. I kind of want to see that now. Like, I don't even want to see him play me. I just want to see Tom Holland in a fat suit play Spider-Man.
Try to navigate New York.
Yeah. He's too big for his webs. He just falls to the ground.
Again, at Tom Holland, at least consider it. If the entire movie canon was deleted, if it is destroyed by a Thanos click of finger, that's not a spoiler. What movie would you pick as the one that you could save? If you could take any movie from history and just save it out of everything, what would it be?
Honestly, I'm sure someone's gonna be like, "Oh, after that whole conversation, that's the most predictable thing in the planet." But I would save like the first Avengers film. Because I honestly can't think of a more culturally impactful film in the modern day. That is the thing that proved to everyone this can work. And it was brilliant. It's absolutely incredible. Still, I watched it just a few weeks ago. It holds up. It's actually even better than I remember it. And it's just an amazing film. It really, really is. So just for the justification of, if not for this film, nothing else beyond that would exist, then the first Avengers, easily.
They were the good days when you worried how you were going to get 5 superheroes on screen at the same time.
Yeah, it seems so quaint now.
I know, I had those heady days.
And
but
honestly, as much as we've been talking about Infinity War and how great that movie is, I still think the first Avengers is the best of the three.
That's very interesting. I need to go back and revisit the first Avengers because I know it's a wonderful movie. But having seen Infinity War, I now want to go back and revisit and kind of gauge where I see myself on that argument. That's an interesting talking point, that is, I think.
Because honestly, my one nitpick with Infinity War is that it's kind of rushed at the beginning. I think that first act needed to breathe a little bit more, and they didn't do that, which I kind of get it, because it was already 2 hours and 30 minutes, but still. And the Avengers, it's just like, it's perfectly paced.
Yeah, Infinity War did have some pacing issues. That's one thing I did notice and did mention, but I couldn't hold that against the film as a negative that brought it down, but it was just something that was noticeable. Yeah. In terms of Avengers, yeah, I will go back and revisit that because having seen the, you know, the excellence that was Infinity War, go back to where it all started again, because it was a different time, and like you say, without that, I mean, Iron Man started it, but without the Avengers, the success, you know, where would we be? What would have happened? It's interesting to think, where would they have turned had it not gone quite so well?
The golden age of superhero movies we're in now would not exist.
Yeah, there would be no talk of superhero fatigue, because there wouldn't be any.
Yeah. In some cases, that would be a better thing than others.
Batman versus Superman.
But, oh, you've gone there.
But in other cases, it's like, there are great movies that just never would have even been considered.
Yeah, and characters.
Yeah, and with the pacing issue, like, that's a nitpick. I fully understand that's a nitpick. And it's just like, it's Avengers, then a tiny hair below that Infinity War, and then right at the bottom of the floor Age of Ultron, which was a hollow mess, as much as I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a lot darker, but it didn't hold up to the rest. It's still okay, but it's not to the same level.
And that's another thing about Infinity War that's so amazing. Like, obviously, yeah, technically speaking, it is half a story, because this is going to be a 2-movie arc, but it never feels like it's pure setup, like Age of Ultron did.
I agree for the most part, of course. But yeah, I agree definitely on Age of Ultron. That did just seem like a connecting piece.
Yeah.
Infinity War, I've seen a lot of people arguing, it's almost 50-50 as to whether could it be viewed as a standalone or is it a setup. It definitely isn't a 100% setup. It's certainly not like, I know, the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, where you know it's a Part 1 and a Part 2. It does stand alone for the majority of its time. That's what I'll say about it.
Yeah. And, like, really, when they stopped calling Infinity War Parts 1 and 2, it was a title change and people read way too much into that.
Yeah, they've even said that they are treating it as two different films, but... Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
From what you're saying of it's, like, pure setup or standalone, it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But even then, it's just like, it doesn't feel like the moments that are minor setup, it's not hitting you in the face. And that's my argument here. Age of Ultron just threw it in your face of, here's the thing that's setting up Civil War. Here's the thing that's setting up Ragnarok. Here's the thing that's setting up Black Panther. Here's the thing that's setting up Infinity War. And they didn't make a good movie on its own.
Put in those terms. Yeah. Absolutely. Age of Ultron is an absolute connecting piece.
Yeah. It's a product.
It existed to further the story, but not in a narrative way, in a sense that, Christ, we need a film. We need to find a way to set lots of things up. I know, let's make a 2-and-a-bit-hour long film, Age of Ultron, chuck it all in there.
Yeah, and like it felt at times more like a product than a film. Again, I enjoyed it, but, and also, the fact that Joss Whedon and Marvel did not necessarily have the same vision for it, that didn't help. Like, it was not like, and I remember these arguments happening at the time, but the Russo brothers and James Gunn, they especially know how to work within the Marvel system. Joss Whedon did not. As great as the Avengers is, Age of Ultron is the point where that kind of got completely out of sync. And it resulted in, again, kind of a disappointing, hollow, messy, whatever.
Yeah, because the tone was at odds quite a lot with a lot of what had come before. And that isn't normally an issue with Marvel films, because totally they're all quite different. Certainly recently, anyway. Yeah, that along for me, along with The Dark World, which sounds pretty predictable, but I wasn't a massive fan of that film. It's not the worst film ever, but yeah, Age of Ultron, it was the weakest of the Avengers film, and compared to something like Infinity War, it's right down the bottom of the list.
Yeah, it's so easy to just mercilessly crush Age of Ultron when something like Infinity War is in recent memory. But in all honesty, like, I still have fun with that movie. Like, I watched it. I watched all the Marvel movies recently. I watched it again recently, and I had a good time with it. But I also couldn't help being like, oh, this is bad about it. This is bad about it. This is a bad decision. And just constantly going through that.
Yeah, when you love films as much as we do, that happens quite a lot. When something so good comes out, you always want to go back to see what set it up. And then you think, oh, actually, it's not quite as good as the thing I've just seen. Sometimes we're justified, whereas Age of Ultron by itself, it's an okay film. But again, it's not. I don't think Marvel has made a legitimately terrible film. So Age of Ultron isn't a terrible film. But when you stack it up to the other, the other 18 films now.
19.
Including Age of Ultron, yeah. 18, 19. When you stack it up against those, then it starts to feel less in comparison. But as a film, it's okay. But it's just in very good company, that's all.
Yeah. And honestly, I think you're right for the most part. There's only one Marvel film I would actually consider to be bad. And that would be Iron Man 2. But even then, it's watchable.
Yeah, I much prefer Iron Man 3.
Yeah. That is, again, another film that stands on its own, where Iron Man 2 is really kind of a teaser for the Avengers.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, people really liked that post-credit scene in the first Iron Man. Let's make a 2-hour version of that. That's totally going to work.
And they got, I don't want to say they got lucky, but it worked though, because the interest was there. And look how much money those movies made and what they spawned afterwards. So it's amazing that they got away with it, essentially.
Yeah. And honestly,
but I guess that's with hindsight though.
That's kind of why I gave DC the benefit of the doubt very, very early on. Because, yeah, Man of Steel was not great, Batman versus Superman, not great. But Marvel had a couple of failures towards the beginning as well. The Incredible Hulk, I don't think, is particularly good. But they redeemed themselves. That. And I had a good time with Justice League. But it's not the mind-blowing, oh my god, this can work thing as the Avengers.
No, I thought Justice League was awful. A lot of that was also, as you mentioned earlier on, just who you have in the film. Not the actors, but the characters. I find it baffling that they managed to not create something which was nothing short of at least very, very good.
Yeah,
I find it so hard to see how they misused all of the characters. Wonder Woman was sidelined almost.
And see, here's the problem. I feel like Justice League would have been a better movie if we had, like Marvel, a bunch of solo movies before it, because they've been doing their films on the completely wrong timeline. Like, they started with a Batman Superman team up and a villains team up and gave us no time to actually care about anyone, which
they were lucky Wonder Woman came out and got them some kind of acclaim before Justice League, because had Justice League come out first, I mean, wow, that would have been a lot of maybe not particularly commercial successes. But critical failures.
Yeah. And
because Justice League made no money.
Yeah, and even Wonder Woman, that movie's really, really good, but there are still some pretty significant flaws with it that keep it from being great.
Well, the ending, or the battle.
Yeah. The third act in general I thought was fine. The main thing I was annoyed by were the villains. The villains of Wonder Woman, I believe I said this at the time, made Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor look like Heath Ledger's Joker by comparison.
Oh, wow.
Like, they were nothing.
Who was... Is it David Thewlis? I can't think of who it was. Who was the big bad, as it turned out?
David Thewlis, who at the same time was giving, like, the best performance ever in Fargo Season 3, was playing the least memorable character in Wonder Woman, who, for some reason, he's like a god who can change his appearance at any point, but apparently through all of history, he had to have the same cartoonish 20s, 30s mustache.
Yes, somebody else mentioned the mustache. Like, even when he was the god, he had a mustache.
Like, he had his, like, big bad form. He still had a mustache. He was in, like, ancient times and still had the mustache. Why?
I put that in my review, that he just, that just looked ridiculous with that mustache fighting at the end. But I liked the film.
Oh, yeah.
There were, like, flaws.
Yeah.
There were flaws, but how they managed to undercook Justice League is, I know there were obviously external circumstances, sorry, and the directorial changes, but yeah. Still, how they didn't make something, it didn't have to be as good as Infinity War, because obviously that hadn't come out then, but it just at least be very good.
Yeah, and like, honestly, the reason why Wonder Woman worked so well is because there was actual fun to be had in there,
yeah,
while having those quiet character moments. And they tried in Justice League to pile on the humor, which was hit or miss, and they still didn't have the quiet character moments.
Exactly. It's just a mess. Well, I mean, Wonder Woman had the wonderful chemistry between
Gal Gadot and Chris Pine.
They were fantastic together.
Oh, yeah.
And then in Justice League, this chemistry just obviously was a taboo word, because there was none of it between anyone. Yeah. I don't know. I'll probably end up getting a death threat for daring to. I want DC to succeed. I want them to do well, because they've got more than enough tools to do it. They just need to get round a table now and work out how to do it, because I don't know how they haven't done it so far, but there's no reason why they can't. Hopefully Aquaman will do it. Hopefully that will smash it out of the park.
Yeah. The more competition there is in the superhero film space, the better movies we'll get.
Well, yeah, because 20th Century Fox have jumped in, obviously, with Deadpool and, of course, Logan. So they're showing that they can do it as well. And
yeah,
they have pushed New Mutants back, yeah. But I've got faith in that. That could be a good film. X-Men Dark Phoenix, maybe not so much, but
Fox Marvel have proven themselves to be just the creative weirdos of the superhero genre. Between those two movies you mentioned, Deadpool and Logan, the Legion on FX, which is extraordinary. Even The Gifted is great. Like, just this street level, very profound, shockingly so, series that seems all too real. Like, they've done some really cool stuff that I don't think really enough people are paying attention to, quite frankly.
Yeah, like, I mean, Logan is an Academy Award winning nominated film.
Yeah.
In an important category.
Yeah, it pierced a major category, which was shocking.
Yeah, so maybe people need to start taking notice. Yeah. I can't see Deadpool 2 winning any Academy Awards. I do think it's going to be a good fun film, though.
Oh,
but
I do like what
they're doing.
Deadpool 2 and Incredibles 2. I'm amazed it's taken a decade and a half to get a sequel to that, because that was always the Pixar film most open for a massive franchise, but we're finally getting it, and it looks great.
I just hope it's good, or at least, you know, near comparable to the first film.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be Toy Story 2 and 3, but it could be Finding Dory level.
I didn't mind Finding Dory. I liked only because I loved Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be just fine. I think they'll manage to, I mean, it's Pixar. They don't have, other than the Cars 3, they don't seem to have an airplane. Was it called airplanes? They don't seem to have too many Red Crosses against their name.
Yeah, and also, as far as Pixar sequels go, they've been getting better, I think. They've been getting less Cars 2-y.
Yeah, which is going to be a thing now.
Yeah, and honestly, I think Cars 3 is the best Cars movie, which isn't saying much, but still.
You're probably the first person I've heard ever say that, which is, again, a first for this show, and it's very refreshing to hear.
I honestly, despite all odds, with Cars being bad and Cars 2 being unwatchable, I actually somehow enjoyed Cars 3. And I don't know how that's possible.
Oh, I'm glad you did, at least. That's 50% of this podcast enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mind the first one. I thought that was quite fun. But the second one just...
I think we can both agree Coco was way better.
Oh, Coco was superb. That's one film I don't want to see a sequel to. Leave it as it is.
Yeah, definitely not. Never.
I'd heard all of the buzz about the film and I was worried that that was going to affect how I saw it or that I would go into it and not enjoy it as much as I should do. But I didn't need to. That was such a wonderful movie.
How the hell Pixar has gotten to the level of animation that they have is insane to me. Like, if they came out and said, hey, we just took a picture of some cobblestone walkway somewhere and put the characters on it, I would absolutely believe it.
Yeah, and it's not even just the animation, it's also the storytelling.
Yeah.
But Coco's story would be, I mean, had it been live action, obviously visually it would have looked a bit different, but the story was also superb.
Yeah.
And I can see why so many people got their tissues out during it, because it's such a good story.
Yeah.
And they do that even in like the Toy Stories, they've got such good stories about them.
Yeah, amazing story, amazing characters, beautiful music. That film is essentially one big existential crisis in the best way possible.
It is superb. I mean, far be it that we should just talk about everything brilliant. What's the worst film you've ever reviewed?
It's probably a three-way tie between the 50 Shades movies. Those,
go on.
That is a trilogy of nothing. Like, it's not just incompetent. It's nothing. Nothing happens in any of those movies. And it's so painful.
Oh, actually, you're not wrong there, actually. Like,
I would say it should have been one movie, but even then, I'm not sure if it would actually move at a tolerable pace.
All of the apparent erotic scenes all blend into one by the end of it, so you could probably just get away with doing a few of them, cherry pick of them, and you could put them in any film, any of the three films, and they'd all it would fit because they're all crap.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I've said this before, if I had to choose between rewatching one of the 50 Shades movies and watching full-blown porn, I would pick the porn, because at least that knows what it is.
Yeah, at least it doesn't take itself so seriously.
Trying to be high cinema and failing miserably because no one can act, no one can make movies, no one can write. It's just, it's garbage.
I felt so sorry for Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan, because they were chained, imprisoned by a three-film contract. And it's obvious by the end of the first film that they were dead behind the eyes, but they had to commit to the final two films.
Yeah. Dakota Johnson, and this is actually a really easy comparison to make because this is literally Twilight fanfiction, but Dakota Johnson is a lot like Kristen Stewart in that she's a really good actress who makes the worst decisions possible.
Yeah, she did. I mean, it's 50 Shades trilogy has, if anything, at least boosted both of their profiles and the fact that people know who they are because of those films. But
that's a bad legacy to drop, though.
Yeah, it's not the greatest legacy, but I'd like to see them step out of the shadows a lot like Pattinson and Stewart have from Twilight.
Yeah.
And Daniel Radcliffe's trying so very hard to from the Potter films. I'd like to see them do that, because don't let this be a stain on their career. I've said before that in terms of the 50 Shades trilogy, if you strip away all of it, there is a half-decent story to be told, I think. You know, a premise. But the way E.L. James wrote it was worse than my two-year-old daughter. Oh, and the way the directors directed it was worse than, well, my two-year-old daughter could have done it. But I think somewhere in there could have been a good story somewhere.
Yeah, there really, really could have been. And
at a stretch.
Like, I think every movie has an out to be good. But some of it is more prevalent than others.
Yeah, all they needed to do, well, not all they needed to, that's a lie. Every film, like you say, just needed an injection of cocaine or something just to boost people up to make them feel like this. Like, oh my god, this helicopter's crashing. You know, you should look like you're panicking. You're in a high-speed car chase. Look like you're in a high-speed car chase.
And literally every time in those movies, like with that, like, helicopter crash moment in Darker, or that car chase moment in Freed, every time it looks like something interesting is about to happen, they immediately cut away from it and were like, man, that was crazy. We're not going to show... really anything interesting about it, but we're going to talk about it a lot.
And even that becomes bland.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to put you on the spot. Fifty Shades of Grey, Darker, or Freed? Okay. Firstly, which one would you watch if you had to at gunpoint? And which one is the worst of the worst? So one of them's going to get a pass. So which one would you watch if you really had to? And which is the worst?
If I had to, probably Freed, because at least then that movie was just like, hey, it's over now. Even though it ended in the most arbitrary spot imaginable. It's almost as if they never had any real writing in this trilogy in the first place. And the worst being Darker.
Yes.
Because it's the middle of it. You already know that it's happened, and you're already in there, but there's no end in sight.
And it's just a bloody horrible movie.
Yeah, it's garbage.
So honestly, the first one gets a pass.
Yeah, I knew 2018 was not going to be great when I looked at the release schedule and saw that 50 Shades 3 and God's Not Dead 3 were coming out within a month and a half of each other.
Yeah, it's not the best way to start your cinematic journey, is it? But
no.
Now that the film's been out for a couple of months, I can talk about spoilers about 50 Shades Freed. Not that anybody gives a shit anyway, but...
Are there spoilers?
I haven't read the last book, but she's pregnant, she gave birth. Mm. They've left the story open. Could there be more?
I hope not.
Whereas when I first mentioned the film, it had only been out for a few days, so I thought, well, I don't want to spoil anyone's hell, so I'll let them experience it themselves. Now it's been out for a few months, I could obviously go into it, but they've left it open.
Yeah. But Infinity War is pretty good.
Yeah. Would they dare?
Yeah. I hope they don't make more. Please don't make more.
I don't see why they would do or should do, but...
Money.
Well, yeah, money. I can't see the two main actors coming back ever again, though.
Yeah. Hey, remember when 50 Shades of Grey and Kingsman came out the same weekend?
At
least in the States. I don't know
and
how
50
it was
Shades
over
there. was meant to be the one people are excited about.
Yeah.
And look how well Kingsman did. Yeah. That was a brilliant film.
Yeah.
50 Shades... If the church scene had been in 50 Shades of Grey, I would love that film.
It just
but it wasn't.
Randomly splicing the church scene halfway through. It would make about as much sense as anything else in that movie.
Well, exactly. You could have had Christian Grey just suddenly just turn into a like a sadistic Christian, a Catholic killer, and then go back to being the guy who's apparently so nice, even though they spent three films making him out to be a complete idiot. The church scene would have helped, I think. I don't want to talk about 50 Shades anymore.
Did you like the sequel to Kingsman? I'm curious.
I didn't like it as much as the first film. I thought it was okay. I went to see it with my partner, and she really enjoyed it. She loves Taron Egerton, so there's why. But I thought it was okay. It disappointed me.
Yeah, that felt to me. I mean, I had fun with it, but that felt to me a lot like Men in Black 2. Like, just hey. We had a perfect ending, but we made money, so we're back again.
We're going to do it again. We're going to rehash a lot of the old stuff.
Yeah, we're going to give the main character who died the dumbest reason imaginable to come back.
And that's it. I mean, I love Colin Firth, and I thought he was so well cast in Kingsman that seeing Pedro Pascal, who's a fantastic actor, him take all the action scenes, for me, I liked seeing Colin Firth, that sort of, you know, the very British man, just kick everyone's ass. It didn't ring true when Pascal was doing it because he looked like the sort of bloke who would do that anyway.
Yeah. They also, they really over-marketed Channing Tatum in that.
Oh, yeah, he was in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, he was, even that's a bit of an overestimation.
Well, yeah, his boxer short bulge was in it for more than he was.
Yeah.
Ladies.
I feel bad for anyone who went to that movie for Channing Tatum, because there had to be a few.
Oh, yeah, but he was marketed front and center as the leader of a statesman, but in fact he was just another one.
It was much more Pedro Pascal, who, I mean, I'm not complaining about, because I love the dude. I think he's an incredibly underrated actor, but still.
Had Pedro Pascal been Channing Tatum, had they swapped roles, it's almost shallow to say, but I may have enjoyed it more. I don't know, because of what he could have brought to it. I don't know. I was just disappointed because it didn't need to be made.
Yeah.
I know there's a Kingsman comic series and whatnot, but it just didn't need to be made. I thought the first one was a fantastic, yeah, just almost like, not spoof, but takeoff of the spy genre. Yeah. And it worked perfectly well by itself. I mean, I don't know whether they're going to be afforded a third film now, but
Probably not.
Judging by the response and the money it made, I think they're going to get that third film, but what they're going to do, I've got no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone into this very, very early on in the podcast, but for people out there listening who think, well, I like the sound of this Thomas guy, and I like the sound of this bunged up English bloke, what advice would you give anyone out there wanting to get into the podcast, or just a reviewing game in general?
Well, mine would be twofold. One, if you're going to do it, actually bring passion to it. Actually bring enthusiasm to it. Be excited for what you're doing. Even if the film you're reviewing is not something to be excited about, like, actually be passionate about what you're doing in the moment, because that will make all the difference in the world in the quality of your reviews and how people respond to it. And two, for the love of God, do the world a favor. Do not rely on cynicism, because there's enough of that on the internet. I know it's easy. I know it gets the most clicks, but it's getting old real fast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sick of seeing why The Last Jedi is the worst film, or why Disney ruined Star Wars, only to have some lame-ass excuse. So yeah.
Why so-and-so is definitely 100% no room for anything else gonna suck.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. Just be yourself. Yeah. Bring yourself to the reviews, and you can never really fail.
Yeah.
Unless you're shit. Sorry, bad at it. Sorry, but excuse my French there. But yeah, wise words from a wise man. I say, self-loathing man who hates his own words has just delivered some optimistic, fine words.
Yay! I sound smart for once.
You could hear the enthusiasm dripping out of him there.
And if you actually take the time to listen to my stuff, it's all this. It's just all me hating myself.
But it's entertaining. It's fun to hear you hate yourself.
Yeah.
It's good. I enjoy it. And guys, that is that for this episode of the What I Watch Tonight show. Thank you so much for coming on and giving your time tonight, Thomas.
Oh, it was really fun.
I've enjoyed it a lot. Where can the world find you in the cyberspace?
Well, I am spreading myself thin these days, so I'm going to go through this as fast as possible, but just know I'm fully aware that I suck in this regard. So the main thing that we've been talking about a lot this show is my movie podcast, Clark Film, my movie TV podcast. That's just where I talk about movies and TV shows that have come out recently. That can be found at clarkfilm.libsyn.com, LIBSYN. I have a show called The Clark Sessions, where I just talk about whatever I want, and it's a very laid-back, happens-when-it-wants, sort of train-wreck-type show. That is clarksessions.libsyn.com. And I have a show I just launched a couple months ago called The Television Archive, where every Monday through Friday, I talk about episodes of a show that has completed its run, like just episode by episode, every single Monday through Friday. That can be found at anchor.fm/TV Archive. Currently, I'm right in the middle of season 2 of the 1960s Batman series, which is so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Twitter and Instagram, TomTom4468 for all the other little minute things. I post links to everything I'm doing there when it happens, and also just post random stuff about whatever my thoughts are on, I don't know, whatever. And including something else real cool that I'm working on. I'm growing. I'm expanding my enterprise.
Go on.
I'm not going to say anything right now.
Ah, so we've got something to look forward to in the future.
It is about something I am very passionate about, and it's with another person.
Tom Holland in a fat suit.
Yeah, I got Tom Holland in a fat suit to do a podcast with me, and it's going to be great.
I've got a scoop, finally.
We're going to do an entire podcast only about fat suits.
Where to find the best material. I like the sound of this. You heard it here first, guys.
Yeah.
Well, guys, go and give it all a listen. You got, like Thomas said, concise reviews, a weekly news roundup, and the occasional rant.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to listen? It's my question. So once again, thank you so much for coming on today, Thomas. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can catch all the episodes of this show on our website, which is whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Subscribe on iTunes. You'll get every episode too, so you get this one and everyone that's come before. We're also on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podknife, YouTube. We are everywhere. So we're taking over the world, guys. So if you like what you hear, share the episode and tell the world. And if you don't, just don't tell anyone. And of course, never forget to tell your grandmothers. But until next time, see ya.
Boogie.